welcome in Wrong Side of the Pond. He is DJ Schweitzer. I am Jeremy Lance. Welcome to our quarterly podcast. Hope you enjoy it. Hope we do a good enough job this time and it lasts for a bit, because that seems to be just officially our track record now.
Yeah, I mean, at this rate, we're going to be a semi-annual podcast in very short fashion, so...
We have big plans for our two shows in 2025.
It's going to be a really big year as we build into a crescendo ahead of the the home World Cup, which we now have a bunch of dates on, which is
kind of fun. The final is in New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
which is where all finals should be.
It really should be. I'm just going to give you a preview that New Jersey is going to be my winner this week. So,
hey, good for them.
Yeah, right?
Guys.
New Jersey will be okay with this. So we'll circle back around to that. But yeah, World Cup final.
A rare W for New Jersey.
Yeah, right. But the World Cup final, along with many other of the dates and locations, have been set for the 2026 World Cup to be hosted in the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, which is super exciting. But we're going to have to kick off with World Cup news today. Instead, we're going to talk about an ex-World Cup star's comments
mm-hmm.
about all of us.
About us. About you, me, and everybody listening. I mean, do you want to start? So this was in The Athletic. I think by now most people have heard about these comments, have seen these comments, have read the article that these comments existed in, but basically in an article with The Athletic, Lindsay Horan kind of been talking about I guess essentially like a lot of the criticism and pressure around the women's team, and obviously coming off of a World Cup where they woefully underperformed. I think they are even willing to admit that to a degree. She pushed back on a lot of that by saying American soccer fans, most of them, aren't smart. And she even couched it with, "I'm gonna piss off some people."
Yeah, yeah. The exact quote is, "American soccer fans, most of them aren't smart. They don't know the game. They don't understand. It's getting better and better." So she does add that little qualifier onto the end too, that it is getting better.
You suck, but you're sucking less by the day.
Yeah, it's like one of those where you catch yourself at the end. You're like, "Well, shit, I just." Literally verbally assaulted.
Like you're
everyone.
Doing better.
Yeah, but you are getting better. I promise. She definitely knew she was in over her head a little bit after saying that. But I think it was fascinating to watch the reactions to this comment on what's left of the soccer social sphere out there, as it's been bisected into all of its different networks. But the reactions were disparate and all over the map.
Yeah.
And some were super predictable. Some were really out there.
There was going to be the assumed anger of how dare you know, biting the hand that feeds you. I guess we can get into this. Like, I think one of the big things from the defensive approach to these comments, when you hear these, is there is a stigma that an American soccer fan, American soccer players, American soccer coaches do live with in the soccer world, of having a less than, you know, other, you know, a lower level knowledge or a lower level understanding or less built out infrastructure and this and that. And there is always that looked down on vibe about Americans in the soccer world.
I do wonder how much of it's self-fulfilling in some instances, right? Like we're so quick to everyone knows a British coach that they've met that migrated their way over here at some point,
right?
That is truly a really bad coach.
Right. And is, but, has their job purely through their accent.
Well, I mean, 100%, 100%. Men in Blazers joke about this all the time, about how, you know, the English accent gets you miles in the world of soccer just because it gives you a false air of authenticity. What's the famous story about ESPN commentator Tommy Smith?
Right.
Is that he had no background in commentating.
No, he was just an Irish guy that moved over to the U.S., was like an accountant or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had a very just whatever basic job in Connecticut, somehow got himself connected with some people in the, you know, ESPN, Fox Sports, whatever, like, world, and was like, you know, hey, I know what I'm talking about. And worked his way into a gig that he's, I guess, still in. I've not seen him lately on anything, but I assume he's still doing something somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, ESPN's dwindling American soccer presence hasn't really helped his equation, but
right.
I think just getting back around to the point, like, I think a lot of we have a chip on our shoulder as American soccer, especially the older fans in particular, who've kind of been around and in the game, who grew up playing maybe in the 80s and 70s, and, you know, really had to kind of just everyone looked down on you. And anyone could scam their way into coaching if they had an accent. And so there's just like this dichotomy that existed forever. And so I think that inbuilt kind of lack of faith in our own abilities, it has ingrained itself in American soccer culture, which in some respects is maybe good. We have that, like, nobody believes in us and we can fight through that mentality. And that's a very, like, you know, manifest destiny, American, like, ethos that really has, I think, does have an undertone in American soccer in general. But I don't know, you know, if that speaks to why everyone is so assured in thinking what they know, right? I'm not sure if that helps the equation either.
Yeah. I think there is a lot to this, right? So on one hand, you are feeling that, like, hey, don't talk about, you know, the American fans. And as someone who, you know, you and I have been fans of this sport, and a lot of people who listen have been fans of the sport for a long time. And it wasn't really only till the last couple of years where just the common notion of being a soccer fan was looked on in a positive light in this country.
Yeah. It has
so,
really,
like,
been,
and that creates this, like, defense mechanism, right? Mm-hmm. Where you're just kind of like, you hear these things and you instantly, like, ugh.
Like, we know more than you think we do. And
yeah.
And I'm sure it over the years, in the 11-ish years that we've been recording this show, like, we've probably made similar such claims about what people have said about American soccer fans and, you know, the American soccer media and the American soccer landscape in general. So we're not, like, innocent in that defensiveness here either.
No, we're not.
I think you were kind of getting around to it. Like, there's that hand of it. Then there's the other side of it, which is, like, the huge burst in popularity in soccer and how it has become cool and it how a lot of people, the way they came to the game is through things like FIFA that really gave you a hands-on control to a certain degree.
Right.
With what you learned about the game.
Right. Where you kind of can build out this knowledge, real or false, of kind of the understanding of tactics in the game. And yeah, so many people over the past decade have come to the table. And that's awesome. And we celebrate that. But with that, there is a lot of people firmly ingrained in the soccer supporting culture that, yeah, probably don't know a whole lot when it comes to tactics, when it comes to, I'm just thinking about the people that sit directly around me in my season tickets. What is a foul? Mm-hmm. You know, I have walked away from matches where I felt like I wanted to punch everyone around me, not because I didn't want them to be a soccer fan and that they were encroaching and you know, stealing our cool thing we had going on and ruining our culture. No, it's just that they were a bit naive to some things, and they were very vocal about such things and you know, calling for fouls that were not even close to being fouls and losing their minds and wanting a card. And which is just commonplace in general with fandom, but like, yeah, I think we've all been there to an extent, right? Like, we've all felt that where we're like, ah, okay, no, that's hold on now. You know, we've all been at a bar or a restaurant and a game is on, and someone next to us, either in a very humble, please enlighten me kind of way, you know, kind of announces themselves as not a soccer fan, or in a very obnoxious, I think what you're doing is stupid kind of way, I'm not a soccer fan. Like, we've all dealt with all of that, that whole spectrum of that. And so, like, yeah, is everybody that supports the U.S. women's national team a tactical genius? No. Is everyone that supports the U.S. women's national team able to define all of the roles on the field? No. But they're still, like, allowed to be fans, and yeah, like, fans are gonna be critical, and sometimes fans are critical and it's really stupid what they're saying, and sometimes fans are critical and they have a good point. And yeah, that's actually not even really like a soccer thing. Like, in any kind of fan sphere, it doesn't even actually have to be sports. There's ignorant thoughts and comments all over the place. Like, that's if we're just gonna just paint with a broad brush anytime we hear those, then everybody's dumb about everything.
Oh, for sure, right? I mean, I think it's tough when you have a comment like this that paints the entire community as one, right? Because one, she didn't mean that, right? Like,
right,
she's not going, everyone in American soccer stupid. Like, right, let's start by saying that this Venn diagram does not include a single circle, right? Like, there are overlapping parts of this here. I think too, when you see some of the responses, like, I put out a very simple, I agree with what Lindsey Horan has to say, right? And my job has been very unique over the years and exposed me to quite a bit that I was aware of and quite a bit that I wasn't aware of. And I think there is a whole side of the game that fans think they're aware of,
mm-hmm,
that is just in a different stratosphere in about every other capacity than what people are used to thinking about. And we'll just start with, and I think Horan was attempting to address this to a certain degree, the social pressures that they're seeing, right? Like, the,
right,
their online presences. And that's just people decry that all the time. Like, oh, that's just what they have to deal with. Well, like, it is a lot to,
yes,
deal with.
But they do actually have to deal with it.
Like, yeah, right.
Like, it's not just a flippant thing of like, oh, yeah, yeah, we'll just have to deal with it. Like, but yeah, like,
And just like
anybody in any job, you have to deal with criticism. And like, that's, doesn't matter how much you're getting paid or how big of a profile you are. Not always fun.
Yeah. Like, imagine, you know, if you drive a school bus, or if you, I don't know, you're an accountant or whatever. And there were like 60,000 people on Twitter being like, man, Jeremy is just this crap accountant. And did you see, like, his number crunching today? It was awful. Like, that would eat away at you, even if you, yeah, knew that to be false. I've talked before about when I ran a team account, like, when there was a loss, I know I didn't have anything to do with the loss directly outside of being associated with the team, but I read all the comments that were all the ats that landed in FC Cincinnati's lap. I had, mm-hmm, to read, and they do wear on you. I know they weren't aimed at me, but there's only so many times you read a negative comment that kind of stuff doesn't weigh down on you. And it's a lot to adjust to, especially when a lot of these girls or guys are in their teens and early to late 20s, but you know, that's a lot to take. And particularly when the people who know the least tend to be the loudest, that just makes to a bad combination of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard thing for, I think, a lot of people to truly wrap their heads around how difficult all that aspect of that can be. I think the other layer to this that I think Horan really hits a head on, and I saw this in so many comments when I tweeted about this, where they'd say things like, speak for yourself, your average 50-year-old boy travel soccer player would wash any member of the U.S. women's national team on the field. Or, most people that play club soccer do understand, though. Or, American soccer fans are not ignorant, certainly not stupid. The general public may be ignorant, but most fans are not. And I think it's some of those comments that I think Horan's really kind of trying to get at, is to right. be like, hey, it's cool that you played club soccer. It's great that you made your high school team. It's great maybe that you coach. But unless you've made it into some of these upper echelons of the game,
right.
you actually don't know. Like I played into very high levels of the game. Those type of situational zonal training that professional players actually go through, even in the first and second tiers here in the U.S., is mind-bogglingly higher than any training that I received. And that, you know, obviously the game evolves right. 20 years ago, but
sure.
Most 16, 18-year-old elite players aren't getting trained in that fashion either. And I think a lot of players think, hey, that person just made a bad pass. That might be the case, but it might also be like, hey, they're told to play that direction every single time they get the ball in that particular right. quadrant of the field. And you don't know that. And that's not something the coach usually shares either. So I think there is a little bit of a level that most people don't really get, even if you've played to fairly high levels of the game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think, you know, it's funny. I see that even in, you know, the rec soccer leagues that we run, and you have people that, oh, I played in high school, and oh, I played in this. And then you see them out on the field, and it's like, they seem a bit lost. I thought they played high school. And it's like, yeah, I mean, just because you play at a certain level, or just because you've done this or done that, the game, the levels to the game are so much higher, and there's so many layers that, you know, very few, and those at the top really have kind of seen it at all those levels and kind of are thinking on all those levels. I remember when we had, at the Dynamo, we had Baya Kebe, who showed up in Dayton at the age of 37 and wanted to come play for us. This guy played for, I want to say like Spartak or some other yeah. clubs, but had played in the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gets out there with a bunch of guys who are young, who have all played. Generally, all of them came from a Division I soccer background. Mm-hmm. Some of them had even played at a higher level. Some of them had been on some American pro leagues themselves in different divisions. And seeing the way that he saw and read and played the game and was trying to make these passes, even with these guys who were doing soccer at a pretty good level for most of their life, you know, there was him and there was them, and there was mm-hmm. they were on two different wavelengths because of, you know, just kind of where they were at. And I think that gets a loss on a lot of people. And again, it's not even just a soccer thing. Like, there's just so many more layers. And when it's, you're doing it at that high professional level, and if you're on a national team, obviously you're doing it at pretty much the highest level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy for anyone else not in that circle to see and think it differently and not realize the tactics that are being worked on in training, the mindset of how we want to play, the film, you know, studies that they're doing on against their opponents. We're just seeing the moment, the play, and we're reacting to it and going, well, how come they didn't do that?
Oh, for sure. I think, too, you know, you think back to that last Women's World Cup that Horan is directly responding to, right? Like, this is where these thoughts are coming from out of her head.
And she had to wear it from that World Cup, right? Oh, I mean, yeah, she was the captain. She kind of, she had to wear that poor performance on the whole by the country and by the squad.
Right. And I think, you know, the some of the comments in that article that kind of skipped the country by as they focus in on the red hot one was, you know, they took ownership. Like, they agreed that there were shortcomings and that people underperformed. And it's funny, like, I think back to those comments that you would see during the early stages of that. A lot of the early commentary was about, like, how bad people were performing and how some of the girls, you know, were letting them down and not playing to their former levels or whatever. When I think most of the informed viewers were like, they actually don't have a plan. Like, yeah, there's no system here. And they're just go. Like, that's all it is. Mm-hmm. And I think anyone who knew what they were looking at wasn't criticizing the players. And outside of some select circumstances, it was mostly like, oh, shit. Like, Vlatko is a trash fire. And he's clearly not prepared them in a way that they can be successful in. And I'm not saying if they had, they would have won the World Cup. I think this was a squad that was probably destined to not win the World Cup in certain circumstances.
Sure.
But, like, I think that is, like, those layers. Like, Horan's feeling defensive. She's like, I'm tired of hearing people say that we were shit because they don't know what they're talking about. Like, it wasn't necessarily all our fault. And she can't say that.
Right.
But she can say...
But it is that pushback of, like, no, we didn't... The collective here of this squad that are, you know, have performed well in all these other stages and all these other events, we didn't just all collectively forget how to play.
Right. And I think that's, you know, she's trying to get out those frustrations. And you hear some people say, you know, like, she shouldn't say that given the role that she has. And I hear that, like, right, it's probably not becoming for the women's national team captain to be like, hey, U.S. fans, shut up, you idiots. Like, you can't, I mean, that's a rough thing to hear. And I'm sure.
You expect the captain to be a bit more diplomatic.
I'm sure U.S. soccer PR, like, has been on red alert and, like, holy shit, like, you can't say that stuff.
That was a facepalm moment for them.
Yeah. So, you know, U.S. soccer's got now yet another controversy to deal with. But I hear where she's coming from. And sometimes, you know, American soccer, like, part of growing up is knowing when you needed to hear it a little bit, even if it's a little harsh. Like, you maybe look in the mirror and be like, hey, maybe we do need to learn a little bit more. This one last comment and kind of what I saw people also saying was, people love this take because they are so sure she isn't talking about them.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And I love that faux type of intelligent tweet because it really is like, it doesn't say anything. It's basically saying like, oh, you think you're not included. Mm-mm-mm. I think most people who have some idea of what's going on will be willing to say, I hear what she's saying. I can look and maybe analyze and find some, you know, agreement with what she's saying. And also at the same time, not think myself to be on equal pain with her. Like, I can accept where my knowledge ends and realize where that lives above. So there's certainly...
I think there are plenty, though, that do think that and aren't, right? And they do think that, oh, no, this is a comment for other people. Like, there is definitely the pseudo-intellect crowd out there that does feel that way. That, like, yeah, she's talking about all those dummies online. And it's like, as they type online.
But it's Ben Fast is for sure putting that on a t-shirt, you know, like, right now. Him and Ted Westerveld are going to try to make
sure
to profit off of that.
U.S. a U.S. soccer star saying that the fans aren't smart is proof that we need ProRail, right? Because had we had that, we'd all be smart, right?
It's the direct
we'd
answer.
All be smart.
It would solve it for sure.
You know, it's funny. I had a very similar conversation with my son this week.
Mm-hmm.
My son is very smart. My son is also very blunt. And that gets him in trouble a lot. And I had to kind of have that comment with, or that conversation with my son that, hey, just because something's true doesn't mean you're not a jerk for saying it.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it rings very true in this particular case. And I think Zach Blanford, the now new president of the Pride supporters group here in Cincinnati, he also is super involved in AO Cincinnati as well. He replied to my tweet saying, "You're 100% out of line, but you're not wrong." It's, you know, one of those like, "Yeah, we hear you, but you can't say it like that."
Yeah.
So, it's a tough one, right? And I do hope that American soccer culture will take this a little bit on the chin, but I don't think that'll be the case. I think they'll mostly revolt and hate her forever now.
Right. And it was just, again, it was one of those comments that worked. It hit the ears of every faction the way they needed to hit to hit them to cause them to have mass chaos.
Oh, for sure.
And mass outrage. Like,
I mean, honestly, if you're mad at her saying it, she was saying it to you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it boils down to. Like if you didn't get bothered by it, that means either A, you get it, or B, you can recognize that other people may know more than you. Like, I think those are the two avenues for that acceptance. So,
like, I mean, I'm one that I always throw it out there. Like, I've been watching soccer since about 2000, and I still, most tactical concepts are just beyond my pay grade. Like, I get basic stuff, but like when people start getting like nitty gritty, and even then I'm like, I know I don't know what you're talking about, but I also don't think you know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tough one for sure. You don't want to be this rude. And Lindsay just went for it.
Yeah. So the other big thing that happened recently was not comments as much as just an announcement, a small little video that dropped out of nowhere early in the morning by Liverpool Football Club, by Jurgen Klopp, basically saying, hey, I'm running out of energy. This is it. I'm done after the end of this season. Boom. And yeah, wow. Okay, that came out of nowhere. I mean, I think a lot of us, I think we've said it plenty of times on the podcast, we were starting to feel like things were possibly going to be running its course, although we say that they sit still top of the table despite today's results.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I just didn't see it happening like this. This is probably the more preferred way it happens, right? Where he gets to call his own exit. But I was caught off guard by this, just like everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question more than anything, like, I think we can all put ourselves in his shoes, right? And be like, I get why this would be a grind and you might want to be done. Like, 9 years and what he's achieved at that club, like, I actually wrote down his trophy haul because it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, one Premier League title, which, I mean, that doesn't sound good on the surface, minus the whole getting the monkey off the back aspect of Liverpool.
Sure, that was a big one.
What was it, like 23 years or something along those lines? One FA Cup, one League Cup, one Champions League title, and two runners-up. I think that really puts a little bit more icing on that cake. One UEFA Super Cup, one Club World Cup, and also a Europa League runner-up as well. So it's just that run alone, that level of concentration, that level of performance, they won that one Premier League title, but they were right there for like two or three others.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an incredible amount of wear and tear on your mind, let alone your physical capability to travel that much. And, you know, he was talking about in some of these interviews that they're already talking about moves they should be making for, you know, the summer and for next January now, right? Like that's mm-hmm. where they're planning. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, like, I don't even think I'm going to be here for any of this.
Yeah.
Like,
here's something you guys need to plan for. Not me.
Yeah.
You need to plan for me not being here.
Yeah.
I'm getting too old for this.
Yeah. But that, you know, while we can all get that, I think the question is why right now? Like, why was now the time that it was announced?
Well, yeah, I don't know.
You'd think, you know, if you know, he'd probably communicated this internally, right? Like, sure. Hey, I'm done after this year. And they were probably like, okay, let's set in wheel, you know, the wheels in motion to find right. a replacement and, you know, start putting things together. And I think in an ideal world, especially as things are going right now, you go win the title potentially
uh-huh.
and go right off into the sunset. And you're like, this was fun, everyone. Peace out. And it looks abrupt, but the club's been planning in the background forever for that.
Sure.
Right.
And I think he probably sees like this era that he's kind of had, you know, he sees that there's a good chance Mo Salah leaves here. You know, possibly goes to the Saudi league. He's already lost, you know, some of the other pieces. It's kind of and it's gone better than expected, I think, this year, as far as that kind of bringing in some of these new guys and kind of trying to keep the wheels in motion. So I don't know. Maybe he does see that, like, this is a good stepping off period. Maybe he is just straight up that fatigued, or maybe he's just, you know, just got bored. I yeah. do like to think, though, that he did just like straight up just catch everybody off guard at Liverpool with this and be like, hey, I want to sit down with the media team and just do a little video for the fans. Oh, what topic you want to hit on? Oh, just, you know, well, it'll come to me when
I'll add lib. Add lib.
And then he just fires that off and everyone's just behind the scenes like, what did he just say?
Like, are we recording April Fool's stuff already? Was that what we're doing? To me, I think it heaps pressure on the squad now, like
mm-hmm.
that they probably wouldn't have wanted to put on the team, because now they're like, well, you got to win one for the club.
Right. You got to, like, send them out on top.
Yeah. Which really, and I this was floated this morning on Premier League Morning, was the idea was maybe word had gotten out that he was going to call it quits and people were sniffing about and asking questions about it. And the club was like, let's get ahead of this narrative.
Yep.
Right. Like,
which we see that a lot.
If we acknowledge that we know he's leaving, that won't put people in a panic
mm-hmm.
that we don't have a plan in mind. Right. Like, I think I think that's probably the most likely reason that we found out about it when we did.
Yeah, no, I think I get that to an extent. I think there's always a little bit of that, right? Anytime you see or hear the rumblings, you do see an organization try to get out ahead of the story. You try to be able to control that narrative, right? So I think that could definitely have been the case. It is interesting. You are coming off of, we're midway through a cycle to where there'll be a World Cup here. Euros are this summer. Does the national team job appeal to him? Is that something that we could see? I mean, if he's leaving Liverpool, if he has said that he will not go to another club in England, that almost feels like the only real logical move is like he takes over the national team at some point.
I think he's left himself a lot of wiggle room, right? Like,
sure.
Right. I could see him never coming back to England. I think it'd be weird if he did, right? Like, I don't think that would be a good move for his legacy, at Liverpool at least. But I do wonder, you know, does a Real Madrid or Barcelona come knocking and make him go like, okay, like that one? The Germany job, I think, is appealing. I think the time frame for that is bad, right? Like, 2026 is around the corner.
Sure.
He'd ideally take over, like, now.
Well, maybe he takes over after the Euros, right? I think Nagelsmann's contract just runs through the Euros. So...
Yeah, that's fair.
He could kind of take over there and then just be in charge of that lead up and into the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, that holds a lot of water there, too. If you want a good conspiracy theory as to why
I do want that. Yeah.
So a while ago, he was very emphatic in saying that if Liverpool ever tried to film like a documentary and he had a bunch of cameras following him around and stuff, that he would be out the door. What was announced alongside his departure?
Yeah, they're going to do a behind the scenes documentary.
Yeah. Like, what if they were like, hey, we're going to do this. And he was like, well, shit, this is my last one then.
Like, I'm a man of my word.
I told you guys that's what I would do. And that's what's happening. So in my heart of hearts, that's what I want to be the case. But
okay,
I suspect that he is actually burnout. And, you know, now the real question is, who do they go to next?
It's got to be Alonso, right?
I mean, that it seems such a no-brainer. He's playing this great progressive football at Leverkusen. Mm-hmm. That's very. I'm gonna compare it to Ange Ball because I haven't watched enough of Leverkusen. The only reason
they're a fun watch right now. I've started to catch a few of their matches, and they are a fun watch.
It's very, and it's kind of revolutionary, and it's a new approach, and mm-hmm. it's not the same thing as Ange Ball, but I'm trying to give that same feel, right? Like, it's like catch around everyone a little off guard with, like,
yeah,
ooh, it's fun. And
I don't know if it's as totally as all gas, no brakes as Ange Ball tends to be.
True. But that's a valid point. And they're finding themselves a lot of success at the moment, given that they're top of the table in Germany. So it's a really interesting pick. I think it's the one that makes the most sense from a legacy mm-hmm. perspective. It's certainly not going to be Steven Gerrard. I have no doubt about that.
No, it won't be him.
I think you have to have success
in a real league. Yeah, for you to get that gig.
That's true. It's going to be a tough act to follow. I think that's the biggest aspect of this. And whenever you see these legendary managers, because that's what Klopp is at Liverpool now, depart the club, then it's almost impossible to live up to it. You know, we're 10 years into the Alex Ferguson replacement story, and they have
to wait for that to work out
to find that man. Right. And you know, maybe they strike gold with Alonso again, maybe they don't, but it's definitely going to be tricky waters for Liverpool to navigate over the next, you know, 6 months.
I mean, the last time they went with a former player, it wasn't a total mess. I mean, Dalglish had some good times.
He did. It's true.
Wasn't all good times, though, obviously. They did have to fire him at one point.
They did. It's very true. And you look, too, at, you know, similar kind of appointments around European football recently, and they've not all been, like, all sunny and roses. You know, obviously, Xavi won a La Liga title with Barcelona last year, but he's already announced that he's leaving at the end of this season, and his comments have been far more on point as to why he's leaving. And a lot of it has to do with the pressure that he's put under. And he literally said something along the lines of, I want to wish my successor, you know, have a good time, but I know I can't because you guys are going to make it terrible for him. Like, it's,
yeah.
And I get
Barcelona is such a circus.
Well, that's another, you know, anyone who takes over that job, I think it's a poison chalice at this point. But
and as long as that president, Laporte, is there.
Yeah.
Hard pass for me.
Yeah, but I mean, but you know, Gattuso at Milan. You know, it's very few cases. You know, you've seen Guardiola at Barcelona, which it seems like they built that all up on a house of cards. And
we are seeing that now, yes.
Right, and then Zidane at Madrid, but I mean, Madrid are also an eternal juggernaut that defy logic and potential bribery schemes. But it's a tough thing to do, and I think Liverpool are going to have a tricky one on their hands.
Winners and wankers?
That seems about the right time to do that.
Give me your winner.
My winner. So I previewed this early in the show.
That's right. Yes.
I'm giving it to the great state of New Jersey for being named the World Cup final host. Of course, it's the proximity to New York City that's getting them this, obviously.
That helps.
But MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, in Harrison, New Jersey, is going to be hosting the World Cup final, which I think is the logical choice. It seems SoFi lost out pretty much the locked-in deal that they had to host the final.
Right.
When they balked at modifying the dimensions of the seats so that they could
accommodate the field. I mean, to be fair, that's not the smallest of undertakings.
It's not, but they're still getting a game. Like,
sure.
The men's national team are playing their first home match.
Yeah, I saw that. The U.S. is basically playing all out west. Is that what I saw?
I don't like that.
Yeah, that was less than ideal.
But I think, honestly, that was maybe a little predictable, right? This is a bit of a necessity of World Cups that I think a lot of people will let pass them by. The U.S. is huge. You can't really expect a team to globetrot across the country and perform for the masses. And if the U.S. were made to do that, even though they're the hosts and they do that all the time for the Gold Cup and whatever, this is not the Gold Cup. And doing so would put us at a disadvantage. Like, you just don't do that.
And this is not just a World Cup. This is next to 94, just like 94, where this is an incredibly important World Cup for the game in the States and for the U.S.'s standing globally in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important. And so, yeah, I as much as I would like them to be, play a game closer, if less travel helps them play better, go for it.
Yeah. But anyway, back to Jersey. The reason I'm giving it to Jersey, I love the poetic nature of this. Despite MetLife kind of being a crappy stadium and everyone kind of describes it as like emotionless, and that part of New Jersey is not great. But it's not awful, but it's just not great.
It's Jersey.
But what I love about this is the fact that so much of American soccer's rich history has poured out of the Garden State, right? Like John Harkes, Tab Ramos. I'm forgetting people off the top of my head that I'm trying to spin through. But, I mean, there have been so many. Bruce Arena, right? Like, just this huge quadrant of American soccer history originated. Right. The Reinas, I could keep going. I know they'll come to me as I'm talking about this. But a lot of these families knew each other, and it was a huge breeding ground for what became the foundation for what American soccer is today. And I do love the poetic nature of that. Like, that is a cool idea. And, like, the last time we hosted a World Cup, the final was hosted on the West Coast. So it probably should be on the East Coast this time around.
And to think Jerry Jones let FIFA come in and hang out in that press box in the luxury suite during one of those games. And he's got nothing to show for it.
Dude, how Jerry Jones of a moment is that too, right? Like, he thought he had the trophy he wanted in his grasp, finally, and all of his machinations finally paid off, and then poof, it vanishes into the ether. And to be fair, I'm super stoked that Texas didn't get the World Cup final. We would never hear the end of it if Texas got it, especially with how CDE they are right now about things down there.
Sure. Okay.
So maybe don't give them a little gift like that, like the World Cup final that could not even be in the US by the time we're it totally will be. But if some people down there have their way, it could potentially not be. So let's not complicate those matters.
Just have Mexico and Colombia play all their matches. Right?
It'll go over great for everything down there. What about your winner this week?
My winner is MLS taking a very bold and defiant moral stance on Russia and kiboshing the would-be transfer of Jesus Ferreira to Spartak Moscow, a club whose owners are well tied into the Putin slash, you know, oil business slash all that happens over there. The MLS said, no, we're not doing business with these people. This transfer is not happening.
It does give you pause, though, because not with the league, but with the Hunt family, who reportedly were okay with that whole exchange.
Well, they were going to get paid quite well.
I get it.
I would imagine that as businessmen, they saw that Jay were just looking at dollars there.
One would hope.
I would imagine, listen, people of that level of wealth, some of their money is already tied in to that kind of stuff. Like, I mean, this is not them dirtying their hands for the first time.
You don't have a B next to your wealth status, and you don't have some blood money.
The bank, there's right? always going to be blood money in the portfolio.
Yeah, it's unavoidable at some point. But yeah, I that's a cool move. I think on MLS's part, that was money that the league would have seen a healthy percentage of as well. So they would have stood to benefit with a big transfer. I think too, Ferreira is a good enough player that he can probably land somewhere else in Europe. It probably won't be for that much of a fee, but
I mean, he was apparently very okay with the move. He was all about the move. I'm sure his wages were going to be pretty spectacular. I mean, I'm sure they were willing to really throw some cash at him as well.
Well, too, I think Ferreira is still on his rookie contract with the league. So,
he's eating ramen noodles
for a paycheck
a week. Yeah.
Boost at this point. So, good to see some backbone from MLS there on a moral issue.
A rare moment where MLS does the right and noble thing.
Well, hey, they have their moments, right?
Enjoy it while it's here. It'll be gone. I'm sure that moment's already gone.
Even a broken clock is right twice a day, right?
There you go.
Yeah. Let's be mean to people now. Who do you want to be mean? Should I be mean to someone?
I'll go. Okay. My wanker is this entire Inter Miami preseason circus brought to you by Apple. How is this? I was going to say, how is this a good idea? I understand financially, this is an amazing idea.
Yeah.
Got that. Understood. Also understand that that's essentially where Apple and MLS are with this entire messy project to begin with. This is a money-making venture, and they're going to squeeze every drop out of the messy experience. However, this makes this super US, you know, MLS super club are looking like clowns everywhere. They've played horrible, and also you have a team that allegedly is going to compete for a lot of things this season. And a lot of people are putting them up as one of the better clubs in the league. And with Messi, you kind of always have to do that. But you are also taking a club that is going to be relying on several pairs of mid-30s to late-30s legs, knees, and backs, and making them add a bunch of extra flight time miles and a bunch of extra match minutes to what will already be a very congested season, because as a trophy winner from last year, they are in a lot of competitions. So this could backfire.
It's definitely gonna backfire. it's got, you know how where you like, there's that story that hangs out there that's like, oh, you bit off more than you could chew, or you got greedy and you went for more of the pie and you shouldn't have done it. And then you end up with pie all over your face. Like, it's definitely destined towards pie in your face territory. But it's hilarious to me that in like the we have no room for Russian money in our coffers, but we will Saudi take money. That Ooh. Sweet, sweet Saudi Arabian not blood money at all.
Yeah, no, no qualms there.
And I get it. I, you know, Saudi Arabia aren't openly, you know, attacking their neighbors.
No, they right just now. Fund others to do the same.
Yes. Yeah. Right. You know, Saudi Arabia aren't detaining journalists right now that we're aware of. They have already liquefied them.
Right.
I mean, it does.
They're not doing it at this moment that we know of, or that were our American journalists.
It was one of those when they said no to the Russian money, I did go, but I mean, I just watched Messi and friends play against Ronaldo-less Saudi All-Stars.
And Messi and friends was also, I believe, Messi-less.
Yeah, there was no Ronaldo. There was no Messi.
The big matchup that never was.
I think those two behind closed doors were like, hey, what if we just didn't show up for this thing?
Yeah,
like,
no, it'd be pretty funny. We didn't play.
It'd be hilarious. Everyone would be pissed. But yeah, you know, it's a mockery of a lot of things, and certainly putting a lot of their chips on the table way too early. Like, what did they think would happen too? Like, of course they would be getting waxed in preseason against teams that are mid-campaign.
That are mid-campaign that didn't have to fly halfway around the world to get to that match.
And, I mean, Ronaldo's Al Nassr team is good. Like, they're
loaded.
They bought a bunch of really good players.
Yeah, it's not just him and a bunch of Jamokes. It's like a pretty good team. I mean, freaking Laporte fire off, like, what was that, like a 70-yard bomb? That was neat.
Yeah, of course they were happy to solve Pep Guardiola's problems. So anyway, it's a bunch of bad decisions layered into one little thing there. But my wanker this week, I'm going to go for a one-off one, which is kind of rare. I'm going to Kyle Walker, who had himself a week as he offered an apology on The Sun to his pregnant wife for cheating on her with an influencer and getting her pregnant, not once, but twice.
Well, you know, fool me once. Shame on you.
Dude, Kyle Walker, I mean, first off, if you've ever heard that man speak, it's just one of those very, like, there's no way that noise came out of that body type of situation.
Uh-huh.
And so I can only imagine him spitting game at anyone has got to be, like, the most annoying thing in the world to hear.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's, hey, man, it's a good thing you're a pro athlete.
And as someone who has been maybe at best classified as a micro influencer, if you throw it all away for, you know, bagging a influencer on the side, like, that is definitely downgrade territory, I feel like.
Yeah.
It's just a bad look all around. And then to have to do it to The Sun. You know, I talked earlier about maybe the reason why Klopp announced that he was going now is because it was about to leak out. That is 1,000,000,000% the reason why Kyle Walker had this interview with The Sun. Like, there, it is the only reason he is publicly acknowledging that he has twice knocked up an Instagram girl. So I just, the irony of that is sometimes,
hey, you got to get out in front of it, right? You got to control the narrative. Don't control yourself. Control the narrative.
You keep doing whatever you're going to do, Kyle Walker, but you just got to be the first one to talk about it. Don't let other people do it first. So, dirtbags all around.
What a good guy.
Yeah.
At least a dog wasn't involved this time.
Oh,
we got that going for us, I guess.
Yeah, that's good. It's great news. Well, that brings us to the end of
this. Was the dog an influencer as well?
Potentially.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But we can't rule that out.
Nope.
Yeah. I think that means we've reached the end of this week's show.
We have.
Or this month's show. We'll figure that out when we cross that bridge. But in between now and whenever that is, if you want to get a hold of Jeremy, he's on multiple social media networks, mostly under the name Jeremy Lance or Jeremy David Lance. One of the two.
Yeah. Just those. Just find me on X. I don't have the energy to go in these other places, folks.
All right. There you go. You can find me sometimes on Twitter or Threads or Instagram, but they're all at Wrong Side of Pond. But it's been fun. Good talking. And, you know, we'll see potentially in June. Who knows?
I don't know. I mean, you know, let's shoot for an MLS preview show.
Yeah.
But I let's like not it. Promise an MLS preview show.
Yeah. We don't want to break anyone's hearts here. So. At least my mom. Sorry,
there
mom.
You go.
Yeah. We'll talk to you soon, folks.
Bye.